Welcome back. It is August 31st, 2018. We're excited to be here. As always, we've got Ann Carter back doing the After the Five. It was a pretty slow news week this week, you guys, right? Like, not a lot was happening. I know Ann and I were talking yesterday. We're like, what are we even going to talk about today? But there are a few pretty interesting stories. And we are excited to tell you guys that if you stick around till the end, we are going to reintroduce How Millennial Are You? We got some feedback that people wanted to hear that segment again, so we're going to do it. And we hopefully have a pretty interesting question for you there as well. So let's start it off. What do you guys think? Let's start with Amazon Go. That was my favorite story of the week.
Always an easy one to talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm bummed they don't have booze anymore, right?
Yeah, no booze,
or fresh
right?
food or right. anything. But I thought the point was interesting. When I first read about the story, first heard about it in the Fast Five, I was like, well, who cares, right? Who needs right. a fresh sandwich? Like, it's nice, you know, and I was giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
I think the point, though, with the booze is really interesting because I think it's a example of an experience that needs a human involved.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to blame Amazon for the fact that we haven't thought of a better way to check IDs in this country probably isn't 100% right.
No,
but
for
I think
sure.
it just showcases that there are still some aspects of this whole experience that do require some sort of human interaction. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I don't hate it. I think we don't know the circumstances behind this. And so
I think
it's, you guys,
quite possible.
It's Amazon's hometown. We have no idea what happened. Yeah. If the real estate became available and was like, do we want to do an A-B test in our own town? And we learned some things from test A that maybe we could open a little bit. I mean, it's only 400 square feet smaller. It's not like it's a dramatic like change to the size.
Well, it's a super good point because, like, let's remember, it's only store number two.
Right.
You cannot knock them for simply, you know, taking away services, like, still in test mode.
Right.
But then I guess I contradicted myself 2 weeks ago when we said, well, it's not new either. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're 3 years in, 2 years in now.
But they're collecting, I think the key points for me are they're still collecting more data. The build out wasn't as costly as the first one was because they don't have the on site kitchen, which is pretty, I mean,
that's huge.
In itself is a
probably
huge.
$500,000
right,
at least, right?
Right. Yeah. So I think that, you know, to me, it's not the worst move. It feels like it was an easy thing to do. I mean, they removed a lot of the big elements that were, you know, probably causing some friction. They still are having to explain, you know, it's being reported in this one, still having to explain to people how to even use the app and download it and interact with the store in the first place. So I don't think it's the worst thing ever. I think, you know, it's an easy A-B test to do on their home turf. So
that's an interesting point. Yeah, I think you're right. And maybe it's how I phrased it too, in the sense of, it's not necessarily bad, right?
It's just,
I think it's, to your point, it actually could be an awesome 1400 square foot experience, and you can have a lot of awesome 1400 square foot experiences throughout the country.
Sure.
I think the point, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too, is I think the point for me was more visual recognition at scale though, as you start talking about like disrupting an entire grocery experience, an entire convenience store experience where alcohol and tobacco purchases are an important part. Yeah, you know, even gasoline, however you start to bring that into it. Like, is this thing really ready for prime time? How much bandwidth do people have? Are there better solutions? You know, how are people approaching this problem versus let's try to rush in and copy and imitate like the Amazon Go?
Well, I mean, we know that they're planning on expanding to Chicago and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you think about the bandwidth of that team, again, I'm going back to, you know, you also want to know how small a footprint you can have, as big as well as how large a footprint you can have. And so we know that their teams are dedicated to probably they're going to have to make a splash in San Francisco and Chicago for sure. It's going to have to be bigger, better, more capabilities. So I think that, they're probably learning more, you know, again, in that smaller footprint, and they'll make a bigger showing once they expand.
The milk and bread thing though is weird as well. Like, not including that, I can't put that in the same category as like the booze and fresh food, because you'd think that even in the smallest footprint of a convenience store, like you look at, like, compare them to a Walgreens or a CVS, you know, they aren't selling booze, and mostly it's a state law there, I guess, but they're often not selling fresh food unless you have a really big footprint. But, you know, the milk and bread thing, I feel that is a huge draw for people who are passing by on foot to come in and grab those weekly essentials that you need. And I feel that's a perfect solution no matter how small the footprint might be. So I'd be curious what that's all about.
Yeah, and it's, the interesting thing for me there is that network is highly localized across the country, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it's local dairy, it's the dairy producers, it's the bread producers, and the supply chain infrastructure around all that gets handled very differently.
You know, so it could be a supply chain from...
Yeah, most of the time it's called direct store delivery, and a lot of times the retailers don't even know what inventory is in the store,
sure.
Right? It's just the drivers are restocking the shelves and all that. So I have to wonder too, as you expand that out with the complexities of how localized all of that is, when you start including visual recognition technology and having and needing to know exactly what that
sure.
product is,
mm-hmm.
that's got to get really complicated. The permutations of how that happens across those localized communities has to be pretty difficult too,
totally.
Let alone managing the drivers and the expectations there when you maybe don't have the fluidity in the inventory systems and knowledge that you're used to. So
right.
like that's to me what is maybe going on.
So maybe not a consumer focused issue or an experience focused issue, but more of a back end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but could be a consumer focused issue if say the supply chain dynamics aren't correct.
Oh, right.
Or
and you're trusting that they have.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that, I don't know, but I think like there's enough there to at least conjecture to say, is there something there?
Sure.
And I don't think that's outlandish to ask the question.
Right.
And I'd love for them to figure that out. But to your point, you may not need it.
Right.
Let's see how much business they can do without that.
Yeah,
those difficult elements. If
yeah.
they can still have yeah. a buzzing,
yeah.
like, grab-and-go food business
yeah.
with their laminated, like, sandwiches and
yeah.
things like that, I mean, maybe they don't need to add all the complication.
No,
just
I mean,
saying.
It's still, like I said, when I visit, it's Yuppie Nirvana. I'd be there every day. Like, it's freaking awesome. So, all right. I know this was, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday. It's been in the news a lot. Walmart and Black Diamond.
Oh yeah.
What do you guys think of that one?
I mean, it's going to be a bigger problem. Walmart's trying to acquire all of these smaller brands, and you know, on one hand, you look at it and you think like this is a big opportunity for some of the brands that they're acquiring. Now, Moose Jaw's a pretty large company, but as they start to grab up smaller companies, like being able to have your product on the Walmart site and have access to the Walmart customer database, that could be really great for a brand. Now, the challenges come in when now your brand's associated with Walmart, and especially in the case of Black Diamond, like they're a, you know, grassroots brand. They definitely do not want to be associated with Walmart, and we've seen that as they pulled their product. I think that, you know, they're going to have to figure out a way, and I'm wondering in like the contractual language when you have a company like a Moose Jaw or an REI that's a collection of brands or a house of well-known brands, how they're going to handle this in the future. Like, do you have to have something written in the contract when Black Diamond comes on Moose Jaw? Like, in the event that we would be acquired by or we would sell our
sure.
products on a third-party site, you know, you agree that you're going to stay in our stable of brands because you make up the value that is Moose Jaw. So I don't know. I think there's going to be it's going to keep happening. And so we're just going to have to wait and see how they're going to handle this. But
yeah, I can't wait to respond to that. But Carter, what do you think before?
Well, I think it's tricky. I mean, you look at some of the brands and you look how powerful the Walmart, you know, momentum is, and you look
yeah.
at potentially how powerful that placement is. But also for some brands, as you mentioned, they're so focused on this grassroots world. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we could list 10 of them off the top of our heads. And I think, you know, putting them on shelf or in, you know, once again, the Walmart portal could potentially be troublesome, right? And how do you maintain that brand, even though you may have been picked up by the giant. So.
But then you look
yeah.
at like what we talked about too, I thought of the Kohl's example that
sure.
we gave last week. As you start to do voice order, you know, as you
right.
utilize voice to order something, like I think it's going to be a hard thing for brands to talk about. Like do you, or to think about is, yes, they don't want to be associated with Walmart, but if you want to get your product to somebody as quick as possible and your product's in the Walmart
totally.
Network, and now, you know, like the Kohl's example where somebody was ordering a KitchenAid mixer, like
sure.
they wouldn't go into a Kohl's, but now that Kohl's is the closest place that has that mixer that they want to get in an hour, like I don't know. It just opens up all these questions.
The same thing, and I don't want to bring Amazon again back into the mix, but you still see the same thing.
You have to.
Right, yeah. But you see the same thing with Amazon where, I was just talking to a buddy of mine the other day, but you know, he's writing a piece about the fact that you have these brands who have spent so much money at creating this incredible brand, this incredible experience, and this mm-hmm. incredible following from the grassroots. And then you go on Amazon, they're like, all right, well, you have 8 photos, and then you have 1,000 characters of text, and maybe if you're lucky, we'll give you some customized content in your product description page. Mm-hmm. That's it. It basically strips the brand away from it. It strips all of those things that they work so hard to do, mm-hmm. and it puts it into your point, right back in the mix of, well, you have access to everyone now, mm-hmm. and it's the most convenient, it's the fastest, it's everything. So are you up for sacrificing all you've worked for to create this incredible brand mm-hmm. in order to be accessible and in the mix?
Yeah.
No, I mean, the part too that we talked about the grassroots, but also on the luxury side, right? Like, they, to your point, they've spent a lot of time trying to build these brands, and a lot of that value is built around the scarcity of how you can find them, right? And not only that, sometimes they don't want, the other part that I think Walmart forgets in this, some of these higher end brands, they don't want to be on Walmart or Amazon either because they can't handle the production side of it. They don't sell that much,
sure.
Let alone they don't want to be, you know, connoted with low prices, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want to have that connotation with them. So this one just riles me up because Marc Lori's strategy is nothing. There's nothing there. It's a showman strategy. Like, he's just trying to expand his assortment, but he can't. And so, like, at the end of the day, like, the only options he has is it's no different than putting it on Walmart's marketplace, and you have to want to do that to be able to do that. And if you try to do this through the circumvent avenue that they're trying to do, people will balk. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, they've done it with Lord & Taylor and Moose Jaw. I mean, how many more people can you do that with? And people are going to balk. They're going to find different avenues. You always talk about this too with social. Like, Facebook is lying in the wings to be that outlet for luxury brands. Why wouldn't the luxury brands want to be on that marketplace mm-hmm. against Walmart?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
As an example. Right. Or Google.
Yep.
Or even Amazon, because the experience is more friction-free. Mm-hmm. You guys agree?
Well, the friction-free thing, I think, is the key here, right? Yeah. Like, it's, you know, do you, once again, you know, demote your brand potentially?
And that's the choice, right? That you may consider it. But
so you're going to balance
Amazon,
it.
Walmart, if right. you're willing to make that call,
and I would argue that go? I would argue that Amazon potentially has less of a negative brand impact than mm-hmm. a brand that's so known positively and negatively yeah. as the Walmart thing. And we should show you this. I do this presentation called The Death of Brands. It's yeah. all about that, of like yeah. how brands are being stripped away, and like we're no longer having to trust brands in order to find the most quality product, because mm-hmm. now we can jump on Amazon and see yeah. 10,000 reviews of people yeah. who are like us, who are in the same way, saying this is great or this isn't good, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, whether you can pick whatever example yeah. you want, but mm-hmm. you no longer have to invest into that brand. You're now just fighting to say who can make it the cheapest and the most mediocre
yeah.
that won't get totally destroyed in Amazon reviews.
You brought up an interesting point there. I'm curious, if I ask you guys a question, maybe Anne, if you want to start first. When you think about juxtapose Walmart and Amazon, which one in your mind's brand is more predicated on low prices?
Like, quick answer is yeah. Walmart.
Walmart?
The 97.
Yeah, right, the 97.
So you're basically saying that it's more important on Walmart to be the lowest price.
I think if you ask me the first thing, if
what's
you say
the brand
who's,
about?
Yeah, if the brand is about low price, it's Walmart. And even like the 97 example that I'm giving is like, on Amazon, sure. it's $18.99, and at sure. Walmart, it's $18.97. And for some people, that matters.
Yeah, and I think I would agree with that, even though Amazon is still about saying, you know, if you have, you're still trying to find the lowest price, so you win the buy box yeah. on Amazon, yeah. is you have to have the lowest yeah. price. But I would argue that we're still seeing users be okay with paying a premium because they know Amazon is going to deliver, the experience is going to yeah. be that much better.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, like, I'm okay spending $2 extra knowing that I don't have to deal with a Walmart.com account.
But there are so many people who are still associating lower price with better, like that. Like that's where
totally.
It's still value over convenience. I think there's a lot of people adopting the fact that Amazon is convenience, and convenience, especially as our lives get busier, that's more important than value, or that they're willing to go for that $2 less. But I think as, you know, all of the changes that are happening in the economy right now take place, like, there may come a point where people are going to go someplace for $2 less, you know?
I was going to say, I have to be careful too. We're talking in a bubble a little bit
yeah.
where we are lucky enough where I can afford to pay $2 extra to have it.
Yeah, but I think you guys are taking the question. You're taking it further than I even intended. What I'm just saying is, like, in the mind of the consumer,
sure,
and therefore in the minds of the brands who sell to those consumers, who plays on price more?
It's Walmart.
Mm-hmm. And therein lies the problem with Walmart's strategy. Amazon's brand isn't about price. It's about convenience. Mm-hmm. Pricing, transparent pricing might be part of that convenience equation, but that's what they're about. And so therein lies a problem, because if the brands are going to make a choice to open up their distribution to get at larger swaths of consumers, they're probably, and they've already done this actually. I hate to say this, the experiment's already been run, because you can see the brand differentiation on Amazon already. They're going to likely go with Amazon because they're going to trust that experience more.
Totally.
Whereas Walmart has all these connotations again of what their stores look like and everything else, and people and the low prices that they play, they're not going to want to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I just don't see how this strategy works. You cannot take this thing upscale that far. You've got to come up with something else.
Mm-hmm. But here's the opportunity for social though too, right? You look you look at, you know, Instagram getting closer and closer,
absolutely,
actually transacting the entire thing, and like a brand's like, well, you know, Facebook and Instagram have potentially the best user experience that's most familiar by the masses, mm-hmm, and that we sit on for 6 hours a day. Like, it seems like a no-brainer. And then also you're not giving up your brand. Like, a lot of these up-and-coming brands have built their entire following on Instagram alone. Like, they have no other platform. They've poured all their money into it. They've done everything. So, like, it's a no-brainer.
Totally.
For them,
and the cool thing about social is, like, the brand isn't even the portal. The brand is actually the influencer who's marketing your crap for you, right? And
totally,
that's fascinating. Like, Walmart, how are you going to compete with that?
No way.
Like, there's no, you've got two things against you, and you know Facebook's going after. In fact,
well, and you go into supply chain, though, is another, like, you have the back end too. It's like Amazon's got that figured out, you know, and being able to, you know, tell big brands like, hey, not only are we going to get you all of these things, but we also have the back end to, you know, help you out, you know, but I don't know. That's another conversation.
Well, you're right, though, but that's where Amazon plays well, because like Amazon could actually be the landing spot and just be the fulfillment option for that, instead of thinking of them as the retailer.
Which is what's
brands.
Happening now, right? You know,
right.
It's, you're spending a bunch of money on Instagram ads that are shooting you over to Amazon, where it's one click and you're done.
Yeah, so that's awesome. More to come on that, too. It's a good segue. Not intentional at all, but I'm actually putting a piece out probably tonight on first product searches being the most important statistic in retail to indicate the future. And it's really around what we just talked about. So if you're interested in that, follow. Be sure to check that out on Forbes, and then also probably putting out a post pretty soon on exactly what we're talking about specifically with Facebook as well. So
totally.
That's cool. Good discussion. What else? Maybe one other thing before we get to how millennial are you again?
Well, we talked a little bit about the Ross stores,
Ross stores
expansion again.
Dollar General had a good week.
Yeah.
Everyone seemed to have a good week
the
last couple weeks.
I think there's kind of this underlying of what's happening in the economy or what's going to be happening in the economy that I think is going to change, I think, what retail looks like, I guess, and what spending practices start to look like. So I think, you know, what Ross and TJ Maxx and those kind of retailers are able to do to disrupt themselves to still continue to create this experience at that lower price point will be something for us to keep an eye on. And I think, like, I start to think about, especially in the home categories, what the potential is for some of these low price brands. And one thing that came to mind the other day was thinking about, especially again in the home category, how you take an example from like a Home Depot and how they're looking at expanding into the trades. I mean, is there a potential once you have a platform that allows people like in the interior design trades and even DIY people who are doing home redecorating and remodeling, and as the economy starts to kind of take another dip, potentially, how they're able to make that accessible to more people. I think that it could be interesting to see if, you know, a TJ Maxx Home Goods is able to bring in some options for tradespeople to come in, have workshops in the space, you know, utilize their platform. If they're able to say, okay, you want this chair, you don't have to drive to 6 Home Goods in your local metro area to find all those chairs. If now, like, I'm able as an interior designer, for example, to sit in this workshop space in a Home Goods and now have a platform where I can say, all right, client, I can get you 6 chairs and here they are. They might be all over the country. Now I can ship them to one location and I still have that lower price point that you're able to achieve for your client, I think it might be an area where they could start to play. But it does really weigh on the ability to have visual search and a great product database that's accurate at your
fingertips. And a good supply chain too.
Right.
But that's interesting, like discount, like truly, truly discounted home design. I mean, Wayfair just got into home design a couple weeks ago.
Right.
So yeah, that's a different angle, kind of the closeout. How do you leverage closeout for home design?
Because that's a big, you know, I have a couple of friends who are interior designers, and that's a huge, or set designer, you know, like all the people beyond, you know, just your one-off, you know, treasure hunt experiences in those places. You know, their product is getting better in the Tuesday mornings and the home goods that you're seeing. The merchandising in those stores is getting better, and the consumers are demanding it.
Well, I gotta tell you, I know this from fact too. Like, a lot of the chairs that you're getting at a Restoration Hardware or whatnot are manufactured by the same people that are just manufacturing them a little bit of a lower price, taking a little bit of quality out. It's no different. So
yeah.
And I don't know, Carter.
Well, my opinion is not that intricate. That was perfect. I was just going to say, I think you had mentioned within that story, Chris, the fact that, you know, those stores are succeeding potentially in part because of this hunt and discover of deals and why that's still such a prevalent thing. And I instantly said, well, you know, Amazon and other retailers are also thinking of the same, you know, it's like the suggested products, and there's really some cool ways. But I think it highlights one of the issues we've talked a lot about, and how apparel online is going to have a hard time. Mm-hmm. And if we wanted to get into it, potentially why brands still matter a little bit.
What do you say apparel online is going to have a hard time?
Okay, so here's the deal. It's like, you find, I am shopping at a discount retailer that is showing that it's working well, right? Mm-hmm. And I discover a t-shirt that's $9. And I said, oh, wow, that's really cool. It's a $9 t-shirt. And I can actually pick it up and feel, it's like, it's a nice t-shirt. Like, I would like to buy it. Mm-hmm. Online, I would argue that users who find a $9 t-shirt say, well, it's $9 for a reason. Mm-hmm. I'm going to actually get it, and it's going to be a piece of junk. I'm going to want to return it. It's not worth taking that risk.
Sure.
And so I still think that that is the edge that these retailers who are having a ton of success are having, because when you're finding deals like that with things that quality is such an important trait of that purchase, they still, in a physical shopping world, they have the ability to showcase the quality of the product and the deal at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you to a point. I think there's some nuances to what you're saying. I think on the first part, I think that the phenomenon you're talking about will become less and less over time, just because returns will become so much more simpler, right? So you can just try it, get it to your house, and if you really find out the quality is bad, you just send it back, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that actually happens a lot already. That's why returns are like 30-40%, right? Totally. I think the other nuance that is for why those stores are successful, though, is, and we've talked about this before too, but shopping is still innately a social activity that people enjoy doing. And so I think there's some aspect of just, I enjoy going to that place for that treasure hunt and then being surprised by the $9 t-shirt or the piece of furniture. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost regardless of what it is, it's just that's the psychology of that trip to a store like that that makes that experience
really
unique.
It's a moniker
really
for some of them, isn't that the moniker behind like TJ Maxx and HomeGoods? Like, you never know what you're going to find.
Yeah.
Or what treasure awaits you or something.
It's the hit of happiness that you find when you actually discover something that you need and at a good price.
And you just don't do that online. You're not unless maybe somebody serves up a recommendation. Amazon's pretty good at that, but it just doesn't happen the same way.
And as they get better at execution, I mean, think about, I don't know when the last time you guys have been in a TJ Maxx or Home Goods or Ross store, but even the fact that they've like digitized their lines so that now there's like one line and it's like, you can now go to lane number 8. Right. Like, even that has made that experience so much better, right? So as they continue to improve, add things like, you know, visual recognition, product recognition, it's going to only get better. And when you can get quality that pays off, you're going to the physical store, the value, you know, like that there's no convenience about shopping there right now. Let's be real.
Totally.
It's a hunt and, you know, you're going for the deals.
Like to do that.
Right. Yeah. You're going for the actual shopping part of it. Yeah. But as they can make that experience better and bridge the convenience and value, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, a whole nother topic talking about how like a super low cost way just to eliminate a horrible like piece of friction.
Yeah.
They didn't need to introduce some beautiful Apple like mobile checkout thing. It's literally just like a ticket queue.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned how big of a difference that makes.
Yeah.
Discount retailer finds a really simple solution influence it, works well.
Yeah.
Yeah. This would be a fun thing to try to go and disrupt. Like, it would absolutely be awesome. But, I think it was all good points. All right, let's do it. Let's wrap this up. So we're bringing back How Millennial Are You? Carter has a question. We heard from some of the listeners, they wanted us to do this again. And then I had this interesting experience this week where I was having coffee with one of the founders of a local large pizza chain here in town in Minneapolis, a 77 years old. Unfortunately, his wife just passed away over the last few years. But he's gone back out on the dating scene. So, and I was talking to him about it, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm on match.com, of course.
Clearly.
And I was that's the awesomest thing I've ever heard. Like, and so the reason we do this segment, as we talked about before, it's not about how old you are. It's about how curious you are to try new things. And so that's why we do it, because Carter keeps and myself really fresh.
Curious.
And curious about how we're doing. Usually I lose, but it's fun. And so Carter, the floor is yours. Take it away, man.
So what do you got for us today? Are we doing the shopping experience one? Is that the one you...
Whatever you want to do, man.
Whatever you want to do. So here's a situation I'm going to put into your mind. Okay. So you are in a local retail, we can call it Walmart, that's on the top of our minds, right?
Sure.
You know, and you are lost, right? Yeah. You're a significant other. You need some, you know, as asked you to get something, you need something very specific. And you are wandering and you are way off, right? All right. What do you do? What is that next step? Are you going to go find the closest person in a blue vest? Are you going to go pick up one of those phones that Walmart has, maybe placed around the aisles if you're lucky to find one?
No.
Are you going to keep searching? Are you going to whip out your phone and try the Walmart app and figure out what that looks like? Are you going to call customer service from your cell phone? What is that next step?
Call customer service.
I guarantee that probably
happens. That might be the most awesome thing.
Did you want to go first on this one?
Man, I wish I had that answer.
Yeah.
Type in Walmart number and then call
here. I'm in the middle of the Walmart store.
You'd be surprised. I'm sure that happens quite soon.
I write a post on Walmart. That's what I do.
Yeah. I definitely find somebody.
You find somebody?
It's probably not the best solution all the time. But I would say, I find an individual that...
What's your success rate there? Have you ever found someone who has no idea what they're doing?
And lately, I have to say, it's been harder. Like I was just in Whole Foods this week, and I was looking for coffee, which at a grocery store should be a simple thing to have. The Whole Foods employee was great and very helpful, but she and I were both wandering together. I was just collecting people on a search. It was not not helping the situation faster.
All right,
but
Chris.
What would you do?
I mean, having worked in the store for a long time, I think like this experience is always near and dear to my heart. I think what I would say is it's kind of nuanced in the sense of, if it's just I need to find something, like I'll probably ask somebody. And I would say most of the time, like generally speaking, I think that usually works out pretty well. The issue I have though is where I have a lot of forgiveness for the employees, mainly because of how the operations are designed. Like if I go to what I'm trying to find on the shelf, or I've been directed to it and it's not there, then what I will do is instead of go find somebody and say, hey, do you have any of these in the back or there's some somewhere else, I will actually whip out the app and do order pickup. Because I know that'll be just in terms of the way the retail operation is designed, that'll be a faster process for me and for them, quite honestly, than asking somebody who's doing something else to talk to somebody in the back to go get that, bring it out to me off cycle, off process, than for me just to go up to some counter on the way out.
So you do the Starbucks mobile order in line
while I'm standing. That's exactly it.
You are actually standing in line and actually do it
because it works in their operations better.
Yeah,
and I think with this one is clear. Obviously, Chris wins. This round of
that
things.
That was super millennial.
Embracing the technology and the digital experience that these stores have focused so much on.
Nice.
Now, obviously, it's hit and miss, right? There are some stores who do it incredibly well, and there are other stores who have a really hard time making this happen. And digital experience like that is actually more cumbersome, really, than it's worth. And maybe Anne, your strategy is correct by just looking back and saying, hey.
It has an effect on how I leave. You know, there is that personal connection with the brand that's happening. So it totally depends on the associate that you have in the store. Because even though, like the Whole Foods example, I have a great feeling or connection with that brand still because of, even though she didn't know what she was doing or where she was directing me, she was still willing to help. And so I think that it depends on who that last mile interaction is with your brand. So
I get that.
I once spent 35 minutes in a store, just to let you guys know, 35 minutes in a store measuring storage totes to help a woman be more confident in her ability to store her Christmas ornaments one year.
Oh my gosh.
Like, that's the type of random thing that happened that you just have no idea about, right?
Yeah.
So you're right, but it makes a huge difference at the end of the day whether or not somebody's going
to come
back.
Get Chris at a store at Christmas
time, enough.
Then it makes sense to ask someone in a blue vest. And on that note.
All right, well, thanks, you guys. Thanks for sticking with us. Hope you appreciated the dialogue today. Have a great Labor Day weekend. And as always, be careful out there.